This is week four, the last go-round of presentations for STAT 196A in spring 2021. The class webpage shows you we have two main topics, three-level models, and a little bit on missing data, plus a collection of special topics that I usually in class take student requests on or student interests. Main import of that is that most any statistical topic can be extended to the nested data situation we've seen since week one onward. So I do have an addendum on study design and power because I like to say something about that that isn't covered that much in the main lecture. So there are some resources there. Reminder on our virtual week five, i.e. submission of a short project. I did make some statements about that in the week zero intro about 5 minutes in. You can scroll to there on the audio. And certainly I'm happy to make any follow-up comments or communications if there are any questions. So on to week four content. Thank you. We're going to finish our presentation materials with just a few special topics today. Three-level analyses, which are an extension of both the measured and count proportion type examples we've done for nested or longitudinal data. We're going to look at nested data today, count outcome first, and then a couple of examples of measured outcomes. We don't need to go through all the examples. And then missing data and imputation methods, if they are relevant or a good thing to know a little about. And I'm going to go back to the basics about missing data because often people don't get a good deal of info on that for even just good old LM type regressions. So we have some material on that. We're going to do the MIR tools vignette, and there's also a separate package, HMI, hierarchical multiple imputation, which I linked the vignette for, but I don't need to walk you through everything. So these lecture topics contain slides for the examples for three-level outcomes and my walk through the MIR tools version of missing data. And we'll go back to mice for simple wide form data. It's easier to do wide form imputation than long form imputation. So for good old LM, you're just doing wide form imputation. for the long form, which is nested data, it's a little harder, but we'll see what we can do. Sometimes you don't have to do it. We'll explain basic ideas of missingness. Basically, analyzing the data you have is often the best thing to do if data are roughly missing at random. If they're not, then it's very difficult to impute what the data would have been. So on page two of our PDF, we have week four. We also have in the lecture slides a whole bunch of extra stuff, some special topics that are alluded to on page one of the PDF. Under week four, D&E, or D&E sections of the course schedule, where we have lots and lots of more things one could talk about, such as ecological inference, survival analysis, nonlinear forms, and a few of those I'll touch upon briefly at the end of this set of PDF slides. You can see them. In prior years, say 19 or 18, I have a long list of links to the various packages that are represented here. You can go back and look at it if power analyses or other things are something you need to look at. One piece of getting started, there's an odd and end here that I wished I had put in lecture three, but it's just a page from the GLMER manual, and I know I have done this. I must have done it in a longitudinal course in some detail. Just a couple of the switches within GLMER, the NAGQ switch, which allows you just how to get convergence, Laplace approximations, excuse me. And you can go from 1 to 9 to get better convergence or better accuracy on the GLMERs, which are sometimes quite hard numerically to compute. So that's a switch I should call your attention. I think it's something I used in the longitudinal course a good deal because we had a little bit of problems. And details for generalized low models, integrals must be approximated, is a Gauss-Hermite quadrature. And that's easy when you only have a single random effect and you can do it there. Most more complicated models have more than a single random effects term, and they use the Ethiopian cattle example, our Poisson count, the herds, to take a look at that, going to NAGQ9. And I had some examples of that, but I think it's in Stat 222. But I had a mention here, and this should have been part of the GLMER stuff. But I usually, in week four, have a good bit of that still to do. So I guess I had it stuck here. So that's why it's there, better in week three. Okay, back to our malignant melanoma deaths. What a wonderful idea. We treated this in week three, because that's what we were doing, as a two-level problem. What we really have is a three-level problem with aggregation of individuals to counties. So it's really a four-level problem, but we only have three. That is, individuals are nested within counties, which are nested within regions, which are nested within nations. And we had some issues with the two-level analysis, mainly that UVB appeared protective. Maybe that's a function of the fact we weren't really using the richness of the data, or it could be the basic aggregation bias factor we have by not having individual level exposures to UVB. All we have is the average UVB exposure for a county, and it could be that the county average is relatively low, but there are various people that got high levels of exposure, even though the county that they belong to has relatively low UVB. So without the individual level data, we really can't start even approximating a UVB as responsible for a melanoma type idea, but we're just using this as play data. But recognize there is an aggregation. We don't have the disaggregated data, but we're going to go from considering two levels to three levels. That is, counties nested within the regions, nested within nations. That's a better use of the data, but we didn't have the slash at our disposal quite then. So we will have it this week. The slash is what allows us to do three levels. So it's just a syntax change, and we can ask ourselves counties within regions within nations. And that's what we'll see. And I'll spend a lot of time just for one slash, I guess. So we have a couple of descriptors of the data. We're looking at deaths compared to expected deaths. It's a multiplicative model. And to remind ourselves, on page 7 of the PDF, so on PDF page 7, I remind you of the first pass week 3 analysis. We're doing counties within region, ignoring country. And our FM1 model requires the death UVB gradient to be the same in all regions. We talked about that in a prior week, that constraint. And from that first pass model, we see that UVB is protective. In the log scale, at the additive effect is minus 0.03. If you exponentiate it, you can see that for every increase of a unit of UVB, the death rate goes down slightly. We have a confidence interval for one unit of 0.87 to 0.97 multiplicative. So UVB, the confidence interval is 9.48
to 986, and the point estimate is 0.966 multiplicatively. So it's a pretty tight confidence interval. And it says that you go down 3% or so every additional unit of exposure. That doesn't seem like such a result that we might look sideways at, but it's what the data analysis tells us. That's good to know. Then I tried a little more complicated analysis, which is allowing the death UVB gradient to vary by region. This is PDF page 8, where I say more. And this is still the two-level analysis, where I allow maybe regions have different effects on death from UVB exposure. Could be people have different habits, et cetera, et cetera. Comparing that model, FM1A, to FM1 doesn't show much advantage for FM1A. We still get the negative even from FM1A, allowing the different gradients. Basically the same result for the protective effects of UVB. And doing a model comparison of the expanded model FM1A versus FM1, you can see it doesn't help you. So basically we're still at the two-level analysis saying UVB is protective at the county level. Could be an aggregation bias effect, because we don't have individual level exposures. So now, on to the great new world of three-level analyses. County within region within nation. That's the real version of the data. And starting with Belgium, we have 9 different levels of nation. We have 78 regions into those 9 levels, and 354 counties go into 78 regions. So you can see there's a few, you could do counts, how many counties per each region, how many regions per each nation. You can get a rough idea by doing the division. So the main new thing to look at is we have a highlighted 3-level county within region within country. So to get the death tilde UVB, that is increase of 1 unit of UVB increases deaths or decreases deaths by how much? For counties within region within nation, so counties are the basic unit because that's the lowest unit we have. Regions are grouped within nations. So the way we can express that, and Bates also has a separate way of doing it, but we'll show his equivalent, is regions are nested within nations. Some regions might have five regions, some nations might have 11 regions. You can do a quick table and see. And so we have a multiplicative model asking about excess deaths, that is deaths over expected deaths. And we're saying that the same gradient applies within each region, within each nation. That's the simplest model. That's FM3. And what we get from that is this nested 3-level model, nation slash region. Regions are nested within nation is the way you'd say it. So the lowest level is to the right and the highest level is to the left. So regions within nation would be the interpretation of nation slash region. Or you could say slash makes regions below nation, however you want to come to grips with it. But that's our basic syntax. That will then give us, and we'll come back to talking about random effects when we do variance components models with the chemistry data or even the extended example from the so-called book multi-level models, which has its ups and downs. But I got that achieved data out of it. And that's 3-level data also, kids within classes, within schools type data. So let's go on to PDF page 11 and see what we might get for the effect of UVB. Ooh. UVB is still quite significant and still protective. little wider confidence interval, a little closer to one on the upper end, but still slightly protective. Fixed effects, UVB 972, about consistent. Then we go on to FM4. I'm willing to consider, quite insistent on considering, that death by UVB gradient may well vary over regions and nations. Allow it to vary. Don't constrain it to be fixed. Let's see if this does any better for us. Same type of model, but here within regions, we're allowing the UVB gradient of deaths on UVB to vary over in, have its own value in each region. And then that gets grouped into nations. That's FM4. And so you can see we're going to get some variance components that we'll come back and talk about in other settings. And we finally get a positive result for UVB. It's not significant. You can see it's swamped by its standard error, but at least UVB is not significantly protective. UVB is no longer protective. That's probably good. And if we consider FM4 versus FM3, you can see looking at this data and its full structure, we get something that makes sense. Allowing the gradients to differ does help you a great deal. Chi-square 20 on 4 degrees of freedom will likely impress even most bystanders. And if you do a confidence interval, you get UVB basically log of the gradient basically zero and the gradient basically one. So a multiplicative basically one. So you can't establish any impact of UVB on death, but it's no longer significantly protective, which is probably a more sensible medical result. But again, we are suffering the fact we don't have individual exposures, but that's part of the content interpretation. For the running of the model, we've got this idea, and you can see main thing I'd like to call to your attention is allowing gradients to differ, there's no reason they should be the same, actually shows up as an important thing here. And gives you a less head-scratching result. The other thing to note in this thing, Bates has a different way of writing. He can write out the slash notation. It's much like the interactions get written out. And his so at the bottom of PDF page 12, FM3 could be written out the way Bates does it in his tutorials without the slash notation. Just nation, region interaction, nation. And that's an equivalent of writing nation slash region. It's much like the star notation can be written out as interactions. And you'll see you get exactly the same result. This is just an aside, but you will see that from Bates. He may have had numerical reasons for doing it. It turns out to be you get the same exact answer from FM3 doing it this way. FM3 Bates gives you the same answer as FM3. So slash notation is more compact, is a good thing to say. And you can put some English on it. Regions below nations. Nations is the highest level of aggregation there. So that takes us to replicating FM3 by Bates's notation. That takes us past PDF page 14, and then to our next example from Bates's MREV review, the chemistry data. Okay, our treatment of three-level models continues by taking up Bates's 1997 A-level chemistry exam data. And this is, the data set is Chem97. And we have 31,000 schools, 31,000 students, grouped into 24 110 schools, and I believe it's 131 local education authorities. Think of those as districts. So we have 31,000 students grouped into 2,400 schools, 131 districts. Of those 31,000 students, about 60% are male, that is 17,262, and 13,760 females. So we do have a good representation of gender. We could ask about gender differences and things like that. That's the chemistry, advanced a chemistry. Women in science is a theme. And so we have three levels: students within school, within LEA, and we have a couple of attributes of each student, including a prior score, GSC, CNT, and science, and gender are things we could ask about. Score is our outcome. I'm on PDF page 15, page 27 of Bates's MLREV vignette. And he did various analyses. We're going to do a couple of illustrative analyses, both to get variance components, to see where the variability is. Kids within schools, within districts. Are schools highly variable within a district, or is it mostly individual differences amongst kids within schools, and then schools are kind of the same and districts are kind of the same? People often ask that kind of question. Do schools and districts make a difference? Is the implicit goal of that. But to see where the variability is one descriptive thing you could do with these three-level data. And we do some of that with the unconditional model. Could also ask about gender differences within each school and do those carry over to districts, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of fun things you can ask for three-level data. In your own work, you'll have a purpose. Here, we're kind of playing around, but we can illustrate at least the methods. Probably not have any deep understandings of how now age 40 chemistry students did 20 years ago, 25 years ago in Britain. It's probably not a deep question. So Bates's handouts have, here's PDF page 16, just has another version, a nice version from one of Bates's talks on the structure of the data. And of course, one good thing to do with any data, our data set, is do an STR, and you get a list of the useful variables and whether they're numerical factor, gender is a factor, of course, prior score is a number. Score is a number, probably capped at 10, I think. Grouping factors, so 2,410 schools, 131 districts. And if you do a summary, you get a quick version of it also from Bates's talk, but you know how to do all that. Here is a wonderful page I'm sparing you. This is just a note to me to write these things on the board, perhaps less illegibly than I do here, so I just stick in pages to remind me of what the basic notes are, and so I can decipher, and maybe I do a better job at the board. We have 31,000 schools, students broken down to males and females. You can see there's a good split. Maybe it's 60-40, something like that. Grouped into schools, so you can see there's quite a few students within each school. And then grouped schools within LEAs, and there's a sizable number, maybe 20, 15, within each schools within each LEA. So we have LEA slash school is our basic three-level notation, because LEA is the highest level of aggregation. School is lower, so it's LEA. School below LEA would be one way to say it. And if we just wanted to get the variance components, we'd do a score tilde 1 plus 1. All we're getting is the means for each individual within a school, and then schools nested within LEAs. That'll give us our three variance components: how much variability there is kids within schools, how much variability there is schools within LEA, how much variability is there across the 131 LEAs. Maybe some districts are much higher scoring than others, or maybe they're all pretty much a wash. And Bates's notation is equivalent with the LEA colon school and one LEA. LEA is the highest level. That's the important thing there. We're also going to look at two-level pieces. We'll have models M1A and M1B. You could do kids within schools ignoring LEAs, or you could do kids within LEAs ignoring schools. And I give you some variance components ideas here, and you'll see how those decompose. And we could also use a prior science score GS count, the notation, to cut down on variance, but that won't give us pure variance components in a conditional model. We could also ask about gender differences, and maybe I do. We'll just have to see. Or if you've looked at the posting, you can see whether I did. Then you'll know more than me. Okay. So Bates does this basic MC1 is the basic three-level variance component result, not using the slash notation, but using his notation. But you're going to get, if you did it instead, one bar LEA slash school, you get the same result. And I think we show you that in the posting, or you can compare here. So here we are, an older version of R, but it kind of works the same. I load library LME4. I'm on PDF page 20 or on the ASCII posting of the Rugosa R session for this. I get Chem 97 by library MLM Rev. That's where all of Bates's examples are. And we've got 31,000 students. We've got the right variables. And if we want to see what's going on, length unique school gives us the promised 2410. Length unique LEA gives us 131. That's easy to do. We've got 31,000 kids. So we got the right idea here. We could do a quick so if we were to take a smart first-year student type approach, we'd want to get some idea of how different schools are and how different LEAs are. That'll give us a rough idea of their variance, or we can just compute it as a descriptive statistic. So that's why I do some side-by-side, some box plots that are on here. School size, you can see most schools aren't very big, median about 20 maybe, but you got a couple of real big schools, the urban schools undoubtedly. So that's PDF page 21. That gives us an idea. There isn't equal school size, but there is some grouping. Everyone, all schools have a bunch of kids, but some a lot. Do that in a log scale, it'd look less extreme. Now, school means you can see vary a good bit. If we're at a top of 10, you can see medians around 5, 5.5. Some schools score very poorly. Some schools score quite near perfect as their average. Remember, we have a lot of schools, but you can see most of them are between 5.25 and 6.25 is our inner quartile range. But we have some extremes. Some schools doing very well. Stand and Deliver, if you remember the movie. Captain Adama, Admiral Adama, playing the teacher. Yeah. Okay. So the variance of the LA means is less than 1. The variance of the school means is much larger. We'll get a look at that. Schools are much more variable than districts. Districts don't differ much. I'm on PDF page 23, my version, just taking my version of Bates's basic analyses. It's also, of course, in the R session. So Bates's first model, which is going to be our basic M, and then we'll compare it to MC1 and see you get the same thing. We're going to do a three-level variance components model to see, to get a good estimate of how variable kids are within schools, how variable schools are within LEAs, and how variable LEAs are. So you can see when we do that, we get our random effects, and we get confidence intervals through random effects if we wanted to, just by doing a confident. I didn't do it right here. I may have done it in the full session. You can see lots of variability. of kids within schools. That's our residual. Schools within LEAs have about half the variance, or a little less than half the variance, and LEAs have very little variability. Once you get up to that level, schools may vary a whole lot within LEAs, but LEAs don't vary much at all. 131 LEAs have relatively small variance, and we saw that just by doing our smart first-year student. We saw it was a good deal lower, and variance of schools. Now, why are the numbers from the variance components a little smaller than our descriptive variances? Because these have a good bit of noise in them. The sample variances still have a good bit of uncertainty in school means or uncertainty in LEA means. That's going to inflate their variance. But you get a rough idea that about five times, about, yeah, good deal. So school within LEA is a good deal smaller than kids within schools. That's the, and the overall means about 5.3, which isn't far from what the box plot showed us. Bates does this exactly the same way in his breaking up the slash notation, LEA slash school. Here it is broken up into the LEA colon school and one an LEA, which is the highest level aggregation. That's all that the slash notation is doing. You can see you get exactly the same result. So M1 and MC1 are exactly the same as I presaged, and that's a good thing to know because you will see it done both ways. I would commend the slash notation to you. It's easier to understand. You can look at two-level pieces, and you can see kids within schools gives you the same residual variance component. That's M1A. But the variance component for school is going to be a little bit bigger. It's going to be the sum of the two, school within LEA and LEA. Basically, variance to... that gives you about just about, if you sum up those two from M1, you just about get M1A. M1B will break up the variance components in another way, just kids within LEAs. Then you're going to get much bigger residual there, and the residual, the variance of the LEAs, 0.5 on page PDF 24. And it's a little bit, approximately the same area as you got from the high level doing of it. Then MC2 is just doing a score on prior score regression, and I show you those come out the same. I don't want to spend much time on those. I go for gender differences because females rule even in chemistry, it seems. Remember Rock and Roll High School? It was PJ Soul's little friend, chemistry major, who took down Vince Lombardi High. If you haven't seen that, that's the chemistry movie to see in regard to this. So if you want someone to blow something up, it's a female chemistry student. Important message from before you were born, probably, but still a good thing. So we took a smart first year student idea to get the gender differences and see females are a little better. Gender, you can see females median is a little higher. You can do the box plot. I think I probably have it here. Yeah, female minus male, school means, just slightly positive. Not a big overall. And you can do box plots of that. And we can do a score on gender, allowing for a gender difference in each school, and then that's nested within LEAs. So our MC sex regression, just to show you, overall females are a little bit better, but significantly better. Fixed effect is 0.17. We do a confidence interval, and you can see it doesn't include zero. So our gender difference overall seems to be in favor of females, even in chemistry. Go Rock and Roll High School. It's another Ramones song. I didn't link it here. There's our box plot. And We did some bootstrapping, and you can take a look at the gender gap within LEAs. Varies a little bit, and the gender gap varies a little bit within school, over schools within LEAs. So you can see, you could look at each of the gender gaps and group them in various ways, but you get an overall variance component from here in the three-level analysis. So those are just some illustrative things you can do. Basically, it's more of the same, but you have a little additional structure in the data, which can be interesting. Maybe there's some LEAs where there's no gender gap, and maybe there's some LEAs where females really are bigger. Those would be good things to look at if we were trying to understand this. But again, it's one or two generations old, so we won't go into it. The last example, which I'll just leave to you, PDF page 28, the achieved data is just another kids within classes within schools, reading achievement data, schools, and then third level is district, so it's exactly the same as chemistry data. Section 2.8 of the multi-level modeling using our book, which does a lot of old NLME and some LMER, and so the data is, it's one of the data sets that isn't corrupted, so I have it available, and you could take a look if you want to see some detailed explanation of three levels. Section 2.8 of their text, which is linked on the main class page. It's a SAGE book. And level 2, level 3, writing out the models. That's page 39 of their text. And they walk you through the same things we've been talking about. So I put it in here to say if someone wanted to read a little more about this or wants a textbook version of the introduction, what we're doing, basically the unconditional model says, you know, there's an average level within school, and that may vary across schools, and schools may vary within districts, and districts vary amongst themselves an average level of achievement. And then chapter 4 of their text goes into it in more detail. I do downloaded it from the book website. I didn't post it separately. Their achieved data set, and that's linked on the main page. So I went through all the trouble of doing that. And there's a whole bunch of data and vaguely in good shape. And so that's the achieve example. We have 160 schools and 8 districts. But the numbering isn't quite right, so you couldn't pick off residuals or anything. So G reads school length. So I did the obvious things with it, but it's more of the same. I just wanted to show you. I went to trouble doing it, and you can work out their examples. And again, they show you some results. Section 4.2, if you want to read their examples, I showed you how to do it in the posted session. So I'll leave that in case someone's really interested in these data. They're model 4.8 and model, it's show doing model comparison, extending the model, all the sorts of things we've been doing is done in this example also. And I just link the textbook and my session are all just sandwiched together in the lecture notes. And you can look at it if you really want more of this. I think we've gotten enough examples. And then I go through four-level model where it's kids within schools. So PDF page 38, I've forgotten this. There is a four-level model, kids within classes, within schools, within what they call corporations or districts. So there you can just about get it. And so you can extend the slash notation. Classes are nested within schools or nested within corporations. That's model 410 in that textbook version, or in my R sessions, page 38 of the PDF. Again, you can do more of these. So four level, we've done it. Okay, and just about got the same result numerically. Different versions of R for something like this. You can get variance components at each level. There seems to be a good deal of variance, actually, between basically districts, and less variability of schools within districts. Interesting. Okay. And page 84 of their book, Model 410, they go through that and say what they think about it. So if you're faced with a variance component model of that sort of thing, we've shown you you can do, if you have two slashes on your keyboard, you're good for four levels. Starting to make sense out of it is more of a challenge. You have to care deeply about the data to go that far. Okay, that will end part A of our narration, our part one, however I post it. We'll go on to missing data, PDF page 40, where we start out with multiple imputation. We'll start out from scratch, and the basic idea of NAs, which can be annoying, but you follow them, and then how to do something about it, and MICE, multiple imputation by chained equations. And Steph, who's from Europe, will be our heroes, and we'll go back through a little bit of that as a good, just special topic. Thank you very much. I will be back.